Okey-dokey. Okay, so I'm going to start with a story today. And this is a story about a church, probably about our size. And and somebody passed away and donated a piece of land in the Great Smoky Mountains for this sanctuary, for this church to build a new building. And so they built it, and they were getting ready to start. And all of a sudden, the building inspectors came, and they said, "You don't have enough parking spaces for your church." Can you imagine such a thing? A big, beautiful church without enough parking spaces? I find that shocking. So they were all set to open their doors and start doing the work of love, and but they couldn't do it. The building inspector was standing in the way. So the minister called everybody and he said, "Everybody who has faith is supposed to come and pray. We're going to come together on Saturday night and we're going to pray." And they prayed and they prayed and they prayed some more for 3 hours. They prayed that their doors would be able to open on the designated day. They finished after about 3 hours, like I said. The next day, the minister was working in his study and he heard a knock on the door. And he opened up the door and it was this woman wearing construction work gear, like a hard hat and whatever else construction people wear. Think of the village people, I don't know. And she said, "We noticed that you have that huge mountain beside your church, and we were wondering, I'm in the process of supervising a project where we're building a shopping mall, and we need some fill dirt, and that mountain is exactly what we need. So we were wondering if it would be okay, could we buy the dirt in that mountain, take it down, and pave it over for you?" And the man said, "Yes, what's your name?" And the woman said, "My name is Faith." Faith can move mountains. All right. So I don't know if that's a true story or not, but anyway, the quote, of course, "Faith can move mountains," is probably from a lot of spiritual traditions. But the one that I'm most familiar with is when Jesus says, you know, if you just had the faith of a little teensy weensy mustard seed, he said it exactly that way, a teensy weensy mustard seed, you had that faith could move mountains into the sea, you know. But then I say, faith in what? Faith in our own power to do it? Faith in God? But what is God? We'll get to him in a minute, but Richard Rohr has this beautiful definition of God that I really like. Richard Rohr is a Franciscan, meaning that he's a Catholic priest. And he's in his late 70s now, and I think he's getting to the point where he doesn't care what he writes. He'll write stuff that sounds so metaphysical. I'm like, dude, why are you not a religious science minister? he wrote a passage about science, and this is in his passage about quantum physics, but I didn't put any of that part in. Anyway, he wrote, "God is not in heaven as much as God is the force field that allows us to create heaven through our intentions and actions." Let's change God to love. Love is not in heaven as much as love is the force field that allows us to create heaven through our intentions and actions. We have faith in that. We have faith in the force field, the love that surrounds us, that is not only around us, but that is within us, that is us, that through our intentions and actions can help us move mountains. So have faith in that. We'll talk a little bit about that today. Before we start, though, I would wonder if anybody here, and you don't have to shout it out or even raise your hand, but is anybody here experiencing something that feels like a mountain that they can't move? Oh, okay. Okay, all right. Do you want to say what it is? You don't have to, it's okay. Yeah, I'm sure that there are mountains, not only personal mountains that we have, you know, whether it's whether it's a relationship that feels mountainous or a physical condition that feels mountainous or a grief that won't let go. It could be global things too. As you know, this week we had another shooting tragedy in a high school. And that thing that keeps happening, you know, it's no longer just a shooting tragedy, it's a shooting again. That starts to feel like a mountain as well. So there are things happening in the world that feel mountainous that I'm sure that we wish we could move. So we're going to look at a little bit about how we can do that, how we can use our thoughts and our actions, our intentions, as Richard Rohr said, to transcend, transform these mountains into perhaps parking lots or even molehills. I want to say a little bit about faith first. Ernest Holmes, I promised I would get to him. Ernest Holmes says that we are not necessarily supposed to have faith in God or faith in love. We are supposed to have the faith of God or the faith of love. I see some former practitioner students nodding their heads. That was a big part of their training. Have the faith of God, or have the faith of love. That means that we are so confident in the power and the presence of the living God, of the living love that is within us all the time, that we have the faith that knows that anything is possible. But so often, we misdirect our faith and obsess about the impossible. Here's an analogy for you. Imagine that there's a great show that is only on Netflix. Does anybody have a suggestion? What?
The Crown.
The Crown. The Crown is a great show. 6 Feet Under, I believe, is only on Netflix these days. That's a good show. Some of the shows I watch are a little racy, so I'd rather not, you know, go into it right here. But okay, The Crown, right? It's about Queen Elizabeth II, right? Yeah. Okay. So let's say that there's this great show on Netflix, and you really, really, really want to watch Netflix, and you have Netflix, and Netflix is, you know, doing Netflix's thing, always broadcasting whatever it does, however the TV gets that information from Netflix, it's always there, right? But you tune into Hulu, and you are obsessed with trying to find The Crown on Hulu. You're clicking channels, you're searching, you're like, where is The Crown? There must be something wrong with me. There must be something wrong with Hulu. There must be something wrong with the world because I cannot find The Crown on Hulu. Dang it. Completely lose faith. Or we could say that your faith is in Hulu when perhaps your faith could be in Netflix. Are you getting the analogy here? Okay. So the world of possibilities is broadcasting at us all the time. All of the possibilities are existing simultaneously, and they are broadcasting, and we simply have to tune into the right channel. But so often we are tuning into the wrong channel, into the channel that will not bring us what we wish to receive, right? You know, what I've observed the most in terms of faith and lack of faith is that we often have faith that everything is going to change and we're not going to like it, right? We come up with worst case scenarios a lot, right? Right? Am I right? But the other thing we do, this is such a paradox, is that we also have a great amount of faith in the idea that nothing is going to change. We have immense faith in the status quo, that the world will always be this way because it always has been. That I will always be this way because I have always been. My life will always be this way because my life has always outpictured in this way. When really what we could do is turn the channel, turn to Netflix, find The Crown, you know? Start thinking about something else. We spend an inordinate amount of time thinking about what we do not want versus what we do want. We invest so much of our faith in that certainty. Our faith and our certainty in that things will never change or that things are going to change in a bad way. I remember a friend, she was actually somewhat of a client in my former church, and she's given me permission to share this story, but she had complete faith that she was always going to be alone. She had had a lot of bad dating experiences. Can anybody relate to that? Dated a lot of bad boys, okay? I know I can relate to that. As I usually like to say, most of them musicians. She had complete faith that this was going to be her pattern for the rest of her life. She had faith in the status quo, and she also had faith that nothing would change. And she had faith that she was going to, this is her prediction for the future, that she was going to wind up a lonely woman. I don't know, you do the scenario. I don't want to get too carried away with that scenario and put it into the atmosphere here. And one day she was telling me her scenario. She was telling me about her investment of faith and that nothing was going to change and that this was going to be her life forever and ever. And finally I just looked at her and I said, you know, your life could change in an instant. She said, what are you talking about? I'm like, you don't know what seeds have been planted behind the scenes or what spirit is working out or what love is working out for you. Your life could change in an instant. And sure enough, a couple of weeks later, she was in the church where I served, but she was shopping for other churches. She was wanting to get back to a more Christian tradition. And she walked into a Lutheran church and sat next to a man, and they sang together, and they talked after the service. And now, 20 years later, she's married to him. And they have a delightful marriage. I remember reading a Facebook post of hers where it was their anniversary, and she said, if I had known today what I... If I had known 20 years ago what I know today, I wouldn't have walked down the aisle to see you. I would have ran down the aisle. Her life changed in an instant. And the same thing is true for each of us. But I know that grace is bigger than any negativity that we can put out there, and that happens sometimes. Sometimes I'm thinking the most horrible thoughts, and then something great will happen. It does happen because grace is bigger than any negativity, any seeds of negativity that we can sow. But we stand a much greater opportunity if we start sowing seeds, if we start tuning into the channel of that which we really want, of saying, my life can change in an instant for good. My life is good right now. I am grateful for everything. My life is a what's the biggest vessel you know? Is an ocean liner of infinite possibilities. What if we were to say that instead of saying things will never change? The world will never change. I will never change. It's always going to be like this. I'm terrified. No, my life is an ocean liner of possibilities, not only for me, but for the world. The work that we do in this center blesses all beings. As we expand to our possibilities, then that gets our possibility muscle working, and we start to expand for possibilities for other people too. Because honestly, I want to face this with you. Not having a good job or the job that you want, or not being able to, I don't know, expand creatively in the way that you want, or perhaps not even having the partner that you want, all of those things are important, and they're all wonderful things to express and appreciate and call forth into our lives. And then there are people in the world that are truly suffering on a very, very deep level. That's one of the reasons that I went to Jordan a couple of weeks ago. I went to Jordan, for those of you who don't know this story, I went to Jordan to work with Syrian refugees. I went because I wanted to test my faith. In this philosophy where we say that everything is unfolding for the greater good and life is perfect in its own way, and of course we know that perfect means inclusive of everything, and that love is everywhere. I wanted to test that in the face of something that I thought was fairly dire, and that certainly looking at the refugee crisis that is happening all over the world is something that I consider to be fairly dire. One of the seminars that I attended with a PhD social worker who was teaching at medical school in a Middle Eastern country, but she got deported back to the United States. And I don't really know why she got deported, but I have a feeling it was because she was empowering people. Anyway, she talked about how the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic criteria that psychologists and therapists and whatnot use to establish diagnoses for people. And she said that for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, although they don't call it that anymore, I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, for that the DSM-5, written by a group of people in a, say, first world country, is somewhat obsolete. Because there is post-traumatic stress disorder, and that implies that there's going to be a time post-trauma, and that there are people in the world where trauma is ongoing. They don't go for more than 2 or 3 days without a loved one getting killed. Their children attend classes in what to do if they are kidnapped. In places like that, she said that sometimes even mental health is seen as a threat, because sometimes when people seem too powerful, the powers that are in charge want to take them down. And so we sat with that, and we held that as a group, and we held that information as a group, and asked, you know, what to do? What do we do about this? Is there anything that we can do? And I, as a religious science minister, was like, okay, there is love in everything. I absolutely know that love can move mountains, and that there is. I have faith that God is here in this too. But where is it? It's hiding at the moment. Where is it? Where can I see that? And then there's the part two where, you know, we come in and we work with Syrian refugees, and then we go home to our comfortable places. I'd go home to my hotel room and turn on the one English-speaking station and watched a lot of really bad old movies that were really, really entertaining. But I was speaking with these young women from Germany that were quite a bit younger than me, and they were talking about how they were unsettled about just coming in and helping the Syrian refugees and then going back to their comfortable lives and saying, are we like spectators? Is this like a spectator sport? And it's not only in, you know, I bring this up because it's not only in Jordan and Syria, and it's all over the world. The refugee situation is all over the world, and there are other conditions all over the world too that threaten our faith, that seemingly threaten our faith, and that can shake us from this belief that we have in the Science of Mind teaching and in other mystical teachings that God's goodness is everywhere, that God's goodness is omnipresent, and that if we open our hearts in a certain way, we can reach and express and experience that goodness. So we sat with all of that, and this was before we actually worked with refugees, and once we started working with refugees, I started having a different perspective. For one thing, one of the things that I noticed, we went to schools for refugee children because the learning, the teaching has to be slightly different when kids have had a severe trauma. And we also went to a home several times where widows and children lived, and we worked with them there. And I found that we actually had much in common, that what we offered them, what I offered them and what the people that were working with the children offered them was singing. And they wanted to sing. And they wanted heart pins really badly. Nemo Patel, who some of you know, was having me hand out the heart pins. And I was like, I can't take it. They're all over me. They're all over me. They wanted heart pins really badly. I'm not sure why, but just as a symbol. They wanted to connect with us. I noticed that they also wanted to give to us. These Syrian women that had next to nothing made coffee for us and handed it out. And everybody had just a little bit. And I drank it anyway, even though it makes me hallucinate. Arabic coffees. Sitting next to somebody in a restaurant, and I drank it. Nemo, actually. I'm like, Nemo, is your face melting? Because I drank it anyway. Get used to it after a while, but they wanted to give us coffee. And at the school where I went to, I was hanging out with some preteen girls, and they were desperate to try and communicate with me, and I don't speak Arabic, but every once in a while, something that they would want to tell me, and they would pull over a translator, and we'd work it out. But something that happened beyond language was that they really, really, really wanted me to take their picture, and I did. I got my camera out, and I was going to take their picture. But the beautiful thing about that is that they always insisted that I be in the picture, too. They wanted it to be a selfie. So I stretched out my arm and stood next to them and did a selfie with them. So there's something beautiful and resilient in the human character that is made more beautiful by the darkness. You know, what I often say about Christmas Eve is that at the end we hold up candles, and it's so beautiful, and the candles, the light of the candles, are made beautiful because of the darkness. It wouldn't be the same if we did it during the daytime. So there's that going on. I observed that. Another thing that I observed, I went to Syria under the auspices of this organization called Common Bond Institute, and one of the founders of the institute, his name is Myron. He is a, let me describe him, he is a Jewish psychologist shaman that works on Indian reservations in the States, also works in the prisons, works teaching peace all over the world, and sometimes works with the Aryan Brotherhood. So he has, you know, quite a lot of street cred, in my opinion. But anyway, I asked him about this idea, are we just spectators? Is it okay that we just go in there and that we serve a little bit and then we go back to our comfortable lives? And he said, oh, you only feel that way because you cannot see how it was at the beginning. He said at the very beginning, when the Syrian refugee crisis first started happening, I believe it was 2011, and thousands of people were coming across the border, Myron was at the border, and he was doing mental health triage. And he was saying there were absolutely no mental health services for really many people in Jordan, but most particularly for the Syrian refugees that have just been traumatized so deeply. And he said he was seeing, like I said, he was seeing 1,000 people a day. And finally that dwindled, and they started making steps, and more steps, and more steps. And now there is a place for them to live, for many of them to live, and that there is a school for their children that addresses some of the needs of trauma. He said, we have come so far, but it has been tiny little steps, and you and Lucy and the other German girl whose name I can't remember right now, and all of us, we are part of those tiny little steps. You cannot underestimate the difference that you are making. Even if you do get to go home to your comfortable life, you have made a difference being here. And they will remember that. And you can remember that too. And all of us can remember that. Because if you're anything like me, you know, we do this work. We do this work of prayer, and we do this work of forgiveness, and we do this work for ourselves, but we also do it for all beings. And sometimes when we look at the news, we say, is this working? Is this futility in action? Is this stuff really working? And we have to believe that we are, you know, that Nemo Patel song, that we are planting seeds, nothing more, and that some things will seem like they're failing, and some things will seem like they're successful, and some things will sail, and some things won't sail. But all in all, there is a power and a presence, the power and the presence that grows the trees and moves the tides and spins the planets, and that is that love force field that I spoke about in that quote by Richard Rohr, and that place within us that can cultivate compassion within us. There is a power and a presence that is doing the work through us, and that has everything well in hand. So yes, even after going to Jordan, I do believe. I believe my faith was tested, and I believe that God is good, that love is good, and there is a beauty and a love and a grace to this universe that is unstoppable, and that we can have it as we turn to the right channel and we open our hearts. It just may not always look like what we think it's going to look like. And sometimes there is contrast, and sometimes we get there through applying paradox and doing the opposite of what we think we should do. Let me explain what that means. I'm going to call up two lovely assistants right now. That means you and Lonnie, Peter and Lonnie. Okay, and Lonnie, you're just over there. You're stage left for just a little while. And let's pretend that Peter is Peter. This okay. Peter is against me. That he's evil and he's against me. Okay, right? Can you? Yeah. Can he get that about him? Okay. And Peter is just gonna put his hands on my shoulders, right, and then just push me over. Okay. It's not very hard, right? Let me try and resist you a little bit. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now you're talking. Right. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Okay. All right. Now put your hands on my shoulders again, and you're gonna push me over again. Okay. So you see, he can't push me over when I'm embracing him. Right. Ooh. But he was close. So now I'm going to have Lonnie come up, and she's going to put her hands on my shoulders, and Peter's going to try and push me over, and Lonnie's going to... Okay. So you see, it's easier when I have a friend, right? Let's give them a hand. So the object lesson for this is when I was speaking about the woman, the social worker, the person who got deported, who was speaking about all of the trauma and how the DSM-5 doesn't apply because there's so much trauma for people that are in refugee camps or that are in occupied countries. She said that normally in the response to trauma, people will do the fight or flight or freeze, right? The response to adrenaline, fight, flight, or freeze. The other alternative is friend. Fight, flight, freeze, or friend. Cultivate community. Not only cultivating community with the Lonnie that will back you up when you're in trouble, but also, as the reading said, forgiving and embracing the person who is against you. Peter. So I hope that means something to each of you, and that you can look at our own lives and apply these principles in ways that are deeply personal and deeply compelling. Really, it is what Richard Rohr said in that quote that I read about how there is this force field that it is here for us, and we access it through our intentions and our actions. And some of the intentions and the actions that we demonstrated here today are embracing and perhaps even forgiving what seems to be against us. It doesn't mean condoning it, it just means forgiving it. And then also cultivating the support of friendship. And what better place to cultivate the support of friendship than right here? We have so many noble friends here sitting in this sanctuary, sitting beside you. Just look around and look at all these good people. Look at all these good people that you can see. Even Peter, They're wonderful. And we have tools to help you remember. You know, I'm so excited that my Sunday uniform, for as much as I can get away with it, gets to be a t-shirt. Yay! Be kind. I was wearing this. I wore it to, I stopped at Starbucks on my way here, and somebody complimented my heart pins, and I'm like, take one, you know? And it's so beautiful to be able to give stuff away like that. The other thing I want to suggest again is that a way to help ourselves remember to practice these principles, I did this before I went to Jordan and was in the airport in Qatar, is to preemptively put a pin in the map. We've got a map that shows, a world map that shows where we are rippling kindness into the world. If you know that you're going someplace, you put a pin in that map, and that pin will hold you accountable. I wanted to sleep in Qatar. But I had a pin in the map, and I had also promised somebody, Jennifer Luce, who had done some work for me, and she wouldn't let me pay her, but she said, you can do an act of kindness in my name when you're in the Middle East. I wanted to sleep, but no. I had a pin, and I had Jennifer Luce holding me accountable. So I went around blessing everybody and giving out heart pins and trying to make the security guards laugh, which is not easy. I'm going to close with the words of our beloved brother, Jesus the Christ, who said, these things ye shall do and more. I don't know that he was talking about that we all have to go around raising the dead and, you know, I'm going to start singing Jesus Christ Superstar in a minute, which is a little politically incorrect, so I'm not going to go there, but let's just say raising the dead and healing sick people. Healing the differently abled, but they don't say it that way in Jesus Christ Superstar, do they? We don't have to go around doing that, but we take these principles and we apply them in our own lives. And we see how our own unique brand, our own specialness, our own wonderful embodiment of love in whatever that looks like for us, we see what mountains are in front of us and we use that love to embrace that mountain and then see it dissolve. And we allow our noble friends to help us. Let us do that now. Let us pray.